Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah.
Not as much Point Junior, but I really, you know, attacked Point Senior and Roger. This is the way they, you know, conduct themselves. Even if you listen to either one of them when they're working a corner on, like, HBO, you know, as soon as the guy sits down, it's, you know, they don't offer any instruction. They'll sit there and say, you know, Rich, let's say I'm working your corner. And no matter what happens, I'm like, you know, say, you know, Rich, you're dropping your left hand, you know, or this guy is throwing, like, two punch combinations. If you flip that second punch, you can hit him with a double counter. As soon as you sit back and, you know, Floyd or Roger, it's, man, this mother effer ain't doing nothing, and you better jump on that, bro, and that's not really, you know, it's not really canon boxing instruction. But, and Floyd Jr. likes to play the villain. You know, he did it when he fought De La Hoya, and he did those 24-7s where he's, you know, Floyd Money Mayweather, and he's being cocky and all that. But you can hear when, they talked to him on this conference call that he was a little heartbroken. And he called Gaethje a couple years ago. It was a one-sided fight. You know, Floyd was just too fast, and beat Gaethje pretty good over six rounds. But, you know, in no way did he, in this conference call that he did, trash him in any way. You know, he really praised him for being a championship fighter and having a lot of heart and, you know, giving a lot of grace to the sport of boxing.
Yeah, and the call, I mean, we're only going to play snippets of it here in a few minutes, but it's at fnu.mypodcast.com, no www, just fnu.mypodcast.com. It's the top one enrolled in the conference call, and I didn't really hang, I mean, I did hang on and listen to what Marquez was saying and got translated, but, you know, I can actually use this in a real situation. It was lost in translation, you know. I don't remember any major, you know, inroads from that whole part of it. Of course, Floyd is Floyd, and he's speaking English, so it was easier to remember the first part.
But,
you know, Marquez, the only thing that I remember coming up on Marquez was he kind of kept the ruse going about not knowing what weight everybody's going to weigh in, and, you know, they kept that kind of stupid secret. But, you know, Floyd kind of gave it away at the beginning when he said something like, you know, what do you mean? I'm not weighing in at no 143. It's the welterweight fight, they kept saying. And, you know, so you should believe, you don't know if it's going to be light welterweight or welterweight. But from the way Floyd said it first, it sounds like it's going to be at 147. Because they asked him how much he was weighing in, and they said 149. And then they made the comment about 143, and he said, no, I ain't weighing in at 143. So it's going to be at 147, and they just made all this up to get these stupid writers to fight over.
Every now and then, because sometimes in this situation where they'll weigh the middleweight, they will catch weight. I think when Hopkins fought Havoc last year, you know, they agreed to fight at 170. And I know there's talk about possibly they were talking about possibly Pacquiao Cotto fight at 143 or 144, but I don't know if Cotto can make it that way. Then they were talking about possibly Shane Mosley, which said you can get down to 143 or 144.
Well, there's a lot of stuff about Shane Mosley, actually, too. Floyd went off about Shane Mosley. We don't play any of that portion of the call, I don't think. But Floyd was really upset about the intention of Shane was getting down. And he mentioned that Shane was taking steroids, and, you know, he doesn't have any of that crap in his repertoire, and, you know, so he deserves more attention. Pacquiao, he went off about, we're going to play a little bit about that. Pacquiao, he doesn't have a problem with personally, and he was very candid and very actually respectful towards Pacquiao. You know, he doesn't have a problem with the fighter himself, and he actually stood up for Pacquiao in a lot of ways, and then Bob Arum just screwed him over. So, and, wary of that, get out of his contract. I guess Floyd bought his own way out of his contract. It was so bad, so. We'll get to that a little bit later here, but,
I'm sorry. I will see it live. So it was like one of the race one. I was thankfully enough to watch the fights, box matches, and I was out with a friend of mine, and we went to see the UFC fights. I don't know if you heard what he did on Showtime for the tribute. Yeah. I came home, and I thought my dad was going to blow a gasket. And he was, I better get, he doesn't curse a whole lot, so when he really goes off like that, he's mad. He's one of the tough old Italian guys. The fight on Showtime was promoted by Don King. Don King, who also, gets promoted to fight the Jacks. World Tour in 1984, whatever. But Don King, he went to the funeral of Michael Jackson. They always shoot with Michael Jackson. And now they're coming up to the Showtime boxing card. They're going to have a moment of silence. They're going to have a moment of silence for Alexis Arguello, Arturo Gotti, who's still showered after Gotti's death, and Michael Jackson. So, first of all, why are you including Michael Jackson in a 10-count memorial with former world champion boxers? That's complaint number one. Complaint number two is, each time they told the bell, they showed a different picture. They showed three pictures of Arguello, three pictures of Gotti, and four of Michael Jackson. Now, I don't approve of Michael Jackson's lifestyle. In fact, I'm not going to get into it. With his accusations or the drug use, just the way he conducted himself. I'm not going to get into that. But the fact of the matter is, the man had nothing to do with the sport of boxing. He's simply an entertainer. And if you're going to tribute an entertainer on a boxing tribute, why would they not tribute for someone like David Carradine or Dave McMahon or Farrah Fawcett, who all died in the same week?
Yeah, that's actually glad you brought the whole Michael Jackson thing up, because it's interesting. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. It just kind of came up about the whole Debbie Rowe thing I was going off about before this coverage even picked up. And it became 24/7, like it did. We were talking about it.
Yeah.
And I told you, Debbie Rowe is not going to fight for custody of these kids. Remember that?
Yeah, I remember saying that.
And guess what? Now she's coming out. He is not even apologizing for putting the story out there like it was true from the very beginning. But now it's coming out crystal clear that she's asking for is not just money, but the continuation of the agreement that Jackson and her had as far as, getting paid. So it's all about the money for her. It was never about the kids. She didn't want to look like an asshole if she did, but the media just kept plugging it and plugging it like it was going to happen. And then what really pissed me off this week is, they won't let it die. And actually, since we're on the subject, I've got to play this. But anyway, he was Stephen Colbert this week. At the beginning of the week, the death of Michael Jackson coverage. No, the death of the coverage of Michael Jackson's death. And this is a real funny report. I have to refresh this, but I guess to watch it. We'll play it here in a second. And also, while we're waiting for this, what I found to be really out of line and just kind of media stupidity and just stirring up the pot when they don't have to. Joe Jackson's an asshole enough. We all know what he did to Michael from the reports and everything.
Right.
They're making fun of him for all the wrong reasons. And they're going after him for all the wrong reasons. And he gets asked a question about the kids and their talents, right? So what does he say? He says, one of them can dance, some of them can sing. Now all these media outlets are up in arms trying to make it look like he's got them in some kind of military camp to become musicians already. He's just geared to get them in the business. When he's made no commentary, if you love him or hate him, he said nothing about, I'm going to manage these kids and I'm going to make it happen. He's tried to sell some of his stuff here and there. He's been an ass about some of it. And then, obviously, he's still got problems with some of the kids. And there's been some questions about whether he should be around his grandkids and know, whatever. I don't think he's going to be beating them. You know, it's not that, it's not even worth talking about. You know, it's just something for the media to kick around. But you know, when it's just he's answering a damn question. I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me why they would put words in his mouth and make him out to be an enemy. But you don't have to. The guy is already, you know, initiated. Like they just keep piling stuff on him that's just needless and lies, and it makes people want to be like, well, you know, they're being too hard on the guy. And I think a lot of people are going to look at that and they're going to see right through it. They're going to be, guy's too hard on him. And the reason why I wanted to bring a lot of that up, you'll find out later, but actually I don't even know if I included it, but now that I say that, I might as well mention it. In the conference call, if you listen to the whole thing, Floyd at one point sounds worse. A lot worse than Joe Jackson. Just to bring it around and make a perfect transition here. Floyd Mayweather Jr. here is talking about how he got back in touch with his dad. Everything's hunky-dory with them two again. And they had a surprise secret meeting that was arranged by one of Floyd's guys, Floyd Jr. Used to work with this guy and brought back into camp. And he was friends with both the father and the son, so brought the two together for a dinner. Next thing you know, Floyd Sr. is back, you know, hanging out at the family and with the grandkids, and I guess one of Floyd Jr.'s kids, one of the grandkids there, is Floyd Sr. teaching him how to box. So what does Floyd Jr. say? But something to the effect of, you know, I got to take care of my kids, you know, because they're the next generation of the Mayweather family and the Mayweather brand.
Yeah, you know,
which is interesting, you know, because you know, after all that shit with Joe Jackson getting jumped on for trying to create his kids into something that he was, you know, or that he created Michael into, you know, it's like, how can this guy get away with it? Nobody's up in arms. He wants to create his kids as boxers. You know, that's a violent sport. You know, as an entertainer, I mean, the kids aren't going to get kicked around being that entertainers. They're not going to, you know, have any lasting brain damage or anything from repeated tours, obviously. So it's just kind of double standard to me. You know, how do you jump on one guy when he just doesn't even hit at the idea of, you know, making these kids into superstars? And you got a guy who's blatantly saying he's going to, you know, create the next generation of his family brand. And, you know, nobody criticizes that. It goes under the radar. But then again, you know, you have the whole Gowdy death and the barely any coverage of that. Anyway, let's just wrap up the Jackson stuff.
I want to say, folks, it's a tough night tonight. There are just some days when it is hard. I was watching the news today, and I saw the Sotomayor hearing the new Surgeon General, and Times Square Superman arrested after a scuffle with cops. And I thought, where was the coverage of Michael Jackson? Nation, today we lost a national treasure. I'm talking, of course, about the death of the coverage of the death of Michael Jackson. It's like only yesterday we watched the meteoric rise of this thing to talk about. It was here and then it was gone, like Octomom or the Summer of the Shark. And some of the finest coverage was my own. Well, Nation, tonight I remember my remembering. Yes, last week I did not broadcast the Colbert Report, but folks, I was here every night bringing me the latest. Jim, show them how much I cared. Which brings us to tonight's word. Jim Wells. We're joined now for the full hour by a man with a name shockingly similar to Michael Jackson. Please welcome Michael Jackson. Mr. Jackson, thank you for joining us. You, sir, are one consummate away from having had a very bad week. How are you feeling?
I'm fine. I'm really more of a Prince fan, so I'm okay.
Once again, for the full hour.
listening to the last night little clip of the late night comedians on Fox News. Oh. Right, so I noticed Fox News curtailed their coverage a lot quicker than CNN. CNN and Larry King went off the deep end. Larry King is obsessed with the whole story. And he actually had Jesse Ventura on last night, and he's been talking about Jackson so long, he doesn't even know what Ultimate Fighting is. He called it Ultimate Boxing. And he asked Jesse Ventura what his opinion was of it. Of course, Jesse, being a former wrestler, stood up for it, so it was great. This, that, and the other thing. But anyway, we have Floyd, who's been waiting so patiently to talk about the impact that Arturo Gatti had on boxing. And Floyd, why don't you just tell us all about it? Just, give us everything, let it all out. Let's hear what you think about Gatti.
Never.
the rib. Head to hurt the rib.
Marquez part of it, actually they did ask him, I forgot about this, they asked him about whether he thought Floyd had made up the injury, which was interesting. Somebody asked him that, and Marquez took the high road, and he said, no, it doesn't sound like something he would do, and he would have had to submit documentation to get the fight changed that he was actually injured, so there was no way it was a fake injury. Wasn't like Floyd was like, oh man, I need more training. I've been sitting down too long. I'm gonna, you know, pull a fake injury. So that was, and then there was also some some back and forth about the weight, but I think you're going to end up just going at 147, but apparently they're going to make everybody wait until the weigh-in day to add some suspense. So that's it for Floyd. Interesting, though, I'd have to say about the whole aspect of the pay-per-view. And that wasn't the only clip of Richard Schaefer and Floyd tag-teaming about the pay-per-view numbers and the box office thing for Floyd every time he fights, which is, to me, the important part of the whole call. This is, it almost sounds like Floyd is coming back for all the right reasons, as far as, you know, we always talk about the welterweight division as the new heavyweight division, and the one thing that's no longer in the heavyweight division is that big American heavyweight that we all want to cheer for. And now, I mean, Floyd is kind of a polarizing figure. Either love him or hate him, but here comes an American welterweight that, you know, everybody knows is real good and wants to see fight, whether they love him or hate him. So that's interesting, and I think he's got a lot of people on his shoulders for that reason, because they want to see that boxing draw still be strong, no matter who's fighting. But apparently Mayweather thinks the biggest fight in boxing is when Mayweather fights anybody. Let's see, what do we got for boxing coming up here?
Well, we can talk about this first. We had the Showtime card, which I discussed with you earlier. That was my complaint off of it. I didn't get to see the fight card, but there were three fights I do want to touch on. The first one is upset. Victor Chitian, the human crab, lost unanimous decision. See what I'm going to butcher this gentleman's name. I knew it was going to be a tough fight, because I had read about this continued fight. Joseph Abeko, who I believe was originally from Ghana. And my dad watched it, and Abeko was down, the seventh round, flash knockdown, and then he got up, and he was on fire, and he hit Darchinchin with a shot. Well, Darchinchin looked pretty good on his way to the unanimous decision win. Then we had Antonio DeMarco with a ninth round, knockdown over Anais Adiyanko, something like that. And then our boy, Steve USS Cunningham. Unanimous decision win over Wayne Brathwaite. It was a good, entertaining fight, but Cunningham was in control the whole time. And now, with the win, Cunningham is the mandatory challenger for a rematch with Tomas Adamac. Adamac fought this weekend. He fought in New Jersey's Prudential Center. Stopped the Celtic Warrior Bobby Gunn in the fourth round. And Adamac, basically, what he did was, after he won that title in that great fight he called back in December, he basically didn't want any more for Steve USS Cunningham. He figured he got that title and he was looking the other way. He can't anymore. You've got two choices now. You've either got to fight Cunningham or you've got to relinquish the belt. Cunningham is the mandatory challenger. So, hopefully that'll be on another Thursday night. We can do the color commentary live again.
Oh, I doubt that. I bet you this time, because of the fight of the year implication.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they're going to have it on cable TV, or maybe people can turn on.
It could be maybe like the undercard fight, like maybe you can make the main event. I'm going to be honest now, and wish that that fight was. They don't see that getting a lot of mainstream buys for, that was the main event. I just don't see a lot of people buying it on pay-per-view. If they do that, maybe like on the undercard, let's say like a Mayweather Marquez, do that as a clean undercard, that would be great. It would give you guys a lot of exposure. But hey, put it on HBO, put it on Showtime. I'm looking forward to it.
Right.
And it's a weekend, maybe I can have it if it's a weekend in Jersey, maybe I can go.
Yeah. But also in the news, for upcoming fights, you know, Roy Jones Jr. is going to fight Jeff Lacy. Have you heard about that one?
You know, some of the press conference pictures, Roy Jones dressed up as, I think it's Captain Jack Sparrow at first.
kind of looks like a French hooker.
Yeah, right.
But anyway, he's putting the flash on that he hasn't put on in the ring in the last few fights.
Yeah, I know.
Press conference. We'll see what happens. Both guys are actually out of the game for a while, as far as, or at least out of the spotlight. Yeah, they could always just, like, you know, put a weight belt around them and throw them from the higher weight. They'll do some crazy stuff like that. They brought WEC guys up to the UFC before. I've seen it happen.
Mark Cuban, he's a Mexican icon, and he's going to get a lot of buys, you know, from people being in Mexico looking for him to pull the upset.
Right. I'll be looking for him to pull the upset, too. This is the best shot ever to get it, Mayweather, I think. Coming off an injury, coming off a layoff. He's all not in the right frame of mind because he's all made up with his dad and all happy and not in the crazy, vicious, and upset mood all the time. So I think this might be the greatest time to catch him off guard. You know, Marquez is such a warrior. Last time he said he was going to die in the ring. So,
I don't know
what the hell he's going to bring to this. I'm not expecting him to win, and I'm not really necessarily rooting for him. But at the same time, you know, I want to see an exciting fight. I don't want to see him get pummeled or not have a chance.
You know what? I mean, I was first of all, this is obviously the first play for that first time for people that he's injured. This is his figure. When he was sent to the ring on September 19th, that was over 21 months for, you know, a fight in the hands. And before playing that first part of the day, Ray White did a preview. Similar to what I do, which is pretty good, you know, to read the level of competition, their style and all that. And they were saying that, you know, they didn't think that we're going to have to rally over the final three rounds just to win a very close decision.
Lance Whitaker, heavyweight fighting Danny Batchelder down in out in California with the Redondo Beach Performing Arts Center. Sounds like a huge venue.
I'm glad Lance needs his name back.
Alright, what was his name before?
When he started boxing, he was going by the name of Lance Mount Whitaker. He was 6'8". But then one day he decided to legally change his name. Goofy. They would ask them, let's go to Goofy Whitaker.
That's pretty true.
Why would you change your name to Goofy? That's not even a good big name.
Right. That's the pretty much the only big fight there on that first page. And then we got a second page of box track results here. I'm looking. What do we got? Bingo! There's a pretty big fight down in Baja, California, Mexico on Saturday. Not a pretty big fight, but a pretty big card. A ton of fights. Martin Castillo, 33-3 versus Alfredo Montano, 9-8. That's pretty lopsided. This is like all lopsided stuff. Jose Ramirez, 15-0 versus Cesar Huizar, 5-6. Couple upsets for you. This match is amazing. Thomas Rojas down in Puerto Vallarta, Jalisco, Mexico. We have actually a title fight. Interim WBC short flyweight title. Thomas Rojas, 30-11. 21 knockouts versus Everardo Morales,
Providence, Rhode Island. So if anybody is listening in the Providence area, this is pretty interesting. Because really, if you do see a picture of the Providence tomorrow night, I would suggest you do it for two reasons. It's a box of cards. You have, five pro-bouts, and then I think that bunch of amateur bouts in the card. Headlining the card is a good friend of mine, Hammering Hank Lunch, who was a guest of ours last year. Hank, his last fight had a very impressive one-punch stoppage over Jason Cintron, the younger brother of Kermit Cintron. And Jason was 10-0 going into the fight. And Hank knocked him out in the fifth round with an uppercut. Hank is still undefeated at 13-0-1, 7 knockouts. Fighting a guy named Josh Breeman, who's 4-2, with 3 draws. He has 2 knockouts, 1 loss by knockout. That, like I said, tomorrow night is at the Twin River Event Center in Lincoln, Rhode Island. And on the card, being promoted by CES and Jimmy Birchfield, our good, close, personal friend, the Tasmanian Devil, will be there, signing autographs of his new book.
Is that the one that they're going to make a movie out of?
I know they're doing, that was when we were talking on last year with James Caan playing his father and Scott Caan playing him. But this book, I believe, is also a biography that was written by a personal friend of his. I saw a part of your blog roll just a few days ago. I saw it on Monday. I said, oh, shit, Vinny Paz book signing. I said, oh, he's got a book coming out. And I saw it in the store, the day after that, and I picked it up, and I was going to buy it. I said, nope, not going to buy it. I will pay for that book, but I want to see if I can order it through Vinny Paz. So, first of all, you can get, the credit for it. And second of all, maybe you get an autograph for me. Remember last year we did the interview and we had his buddy DJ Angry Yank, who was kind of runs Vinny's website and stuff. I'm gonna email him tonight to see if I can inquire about getting a hold of one of these books. I'd rather buy it from Vinny, let him make him get the credit for selling it. I don't know if he gets a proceed or percent or what to get sold, but I can buy it from him, I'd rather do that.
So are you going to make a
decision? Need to talk to them into buying the advertising space on the site.
Whoa. Are you going in over your head now?
Hey, I'm just thinking, man,
You don't get paid to think.
I don't get paid at all. You never know what comes out of it.
But that's actually really it for boxing. But there is one major title, I'm sure you want to know about, that's at stake this weekend over in Panama City, Canada. It's going to be an 11-round minimum weight fight between Walter Tello, 13-2, with 6 knockouts, and the beast, Alberto Rios, 9-0, with 5 knockouts. And get this, gentlemen, the biggest belt in the whole entire world. The Panamanian middleweight title. Minimum weight title, sorry. And the WBA Fedelatin minimum weight title. This guy, whoever wins this, is going to have more hardware on him. And it's going to weigh so much, it's going to be more than his own weight.
Favorite quotes of all time, Rich, I'm sure I said this to you probably about 30 or 40 times on the air. But years ago, you know, we're sitting down, we're watching the fights on ESPN, and it was a Mark Tushar Johnson. And I used to like Mark. He was a tough little fighter, world champ. And he was in the champ at the time at flyweight, 112 pounds. And I think he was trying to get a fight with maybe Michael Carvajal, who was a longtime champion out of Albuquerque, Mexico, and 108 pounds, junior flyweight. So Mark Johnson's trying to call Michael Carvajal out. He said, "Well, why don't you step up with the big boys?" I said, "I think the only time in history that a guy at 112 pounds referred to himself as a quote unquote big boy."
Yeah, right.
You know, I just looked it up. The paperweight is actually technique for flyweight.
Okay.
95 pounds and below. And also used to be.
Trash talking, which I was out in the background doing it, doing some bad blood, and Anderson normally doing the guy that he hit a guy and the guy was going out like that, he would just kind of walk away and let the referee stop. The guy would probably stay out cold, but apparently he didn't like Biscuit, so he just threw him down with his vicious looking elbow right to the jaw. And that scares me, because I mean, that guy was clearly undefended. He could have been, you know, seriously hurt. Thankfully, he wasn't. And obviously, the main event was a little bit of redemption for Brock Lesnar. And Lesnar, when he was a professional wrestler, he was a bad guy. He was a very good one. He was a good guy because the fans didn't really care for that much. But he wanted a better one, you know, because he was just big, you know, glad-looking guy. And he had that really just animalistic personality and, you know, scary, intimidating. And he got his revenge on Frank Mir, you know, the, if you saw it, Rich, the first time they fought, Lesnar got right into him, took Mir down within like the first 5 seconds, and started hammer fisting him, and fought really aggressively, and ended up making a mistake. This time, Lesnar was a vacation. He boxed early. He was there, he was boxing. Then he was able to get the double leg takedown to really slam Mir down pretty hard, and then finally, got him kind of turned over in the second round, and he drove about a dozen hard punches right in his face, and you know, no choice but to stop it.
Just like I said, it would happen, right?
Yeah.
Because those hands are like turkeys, and actually there's a lot of talk about who's going to fight next, and there was a couple stories about how, you know, the whole Lesnar victory was kind of muffled by the press that Fedor got afterwards, because, you know, he's obviously the one guy everybody wants to see fight the UFC champion, and the UFC isn't willing to put this stuff together to make it happen, so, you know, that got a lot of press over the last few days, instead of, Lesnar, you know, fight Lesnar within the UFC. But there were some names kicked around, and one of the most intriguing names, I think, is Shane Carwin. There was a story actually yesterday that I read about Shane taking exception to Brock's actions after the fight. Now, what happened after the fight, actually, before I even get into that, I want to say one thing about why everybody was bullying him, I think, in addition to, you know, he came over from wrestling, and I don't know if he was the villain over there. I don't really watch enough wrestling to know. Even so, anybody coming over from fake fighting background to a real fighting background, being the newcomer and you know, not having that great a record yet, is going to be the least favorite guy when he's going to be going up against the guy who's been around for a while in a real fighting division. And you got a guy like Frank coming in there, and not only is he popular, but when I did the whole rumor about Joe Rogan leaving the UFC, he was the number one guy that people were talking about replacing Joe Rogan. He's done the commentary a few times, a bunch of times for the WEC, he does it. And people love him. I mean, they like to listen to him talk, and they like all the stories he has, they like his knowledge of the sport, and a lot of the seasoned UFC guys were predicted to win that fight just because of that. But it seemed to me like, for some reason, I watched that beginning, when it came in, it seemed like he was, it was almost like the Oscar De La Hoya Pacquiao fight. He came in and he looked beautiful, all right? And he had that big freaking hematoma on his forehead, and he just seemed distracted. And also, he had a big bandage on his knee, so and he just looked beat up, and he just seemed distracted, like he wasn't pumped. He wasn't jumping up and down, you know. He was giving the angry stare and all that. But then Brock comes in, and you can't read Brock either. Brock is pretty monotone before the fight, but then once it started, I knew it. I picked right. I knew he was going to do it. He was going to win, and you know, just pretty much by hammer fist is how he did it. You know, those are more. More just up against the cage, straight punches at that point when he finally closed it out. But then what really struck me, of course, was the, you know, the aftermath of the fight when he's middle fingering everybody and spits his mouthpiece out for the cameras and then talks all the smack about Bud Light. Bud Light didn't pay me enough, so I'm going to go home and have Coors Light. And I don't know if you caught it, but there was an apology he had to issue after the fact. Right. I'm not prejudiced against any beer. And he admitted, though, that Dana White confronted him after the whole thing was over and chewed him out. So that's why he changed his tune so quickly. But, you know, I think that stuff is always good fun. Dana says stuff that's 10 times worse, but, you know, with all the criticism and all the spotlight that's on the sponsorship issues with the UFC, we talked a little bit about last week, but the whole $100,000 tax that they want to put on people who are going to sponsor fighters now, that's been clarified by Dana. Now he says that that's not every company. That was just an example that he gave, but they will be doing that. They will be trying to do that to make sure that the organization, you know, is taken care of. But, to make a long story short, Brock had to apologize, and, you know, he seems like he meant it, even though he definitely, you know, he qualified it by saying that Dana forced him to. But,
might not like him coming from a professional wrestling background. Just remember, you know, before you said that, Brock Lesnar was a legitimate athlete. You know, what like you just stepping into the ranks of professional wrestling.
Fighting. Good thing I'm going to a party this Saturday. nothing fancy on TV. We have,
no matter what you're doing this weekend, I got you beat. If I go to a party, but I am Saturday night going to a club, we're having cupcake, bikini, beer pong.
Nice. Nice. Really talked about the circumstances of Gaddy's death yet. What about him? Wouldn't he have let somebody in?
after the game's over and I get up so drunk I can barely stand up, you know, I'm slurring some words to some friends of mine, and my one friend there, and she's obviously much smaller than I am, but she's pretty athletic and good shape. And she's like, I'm gonna tap her, you know, I said, yeah, right, you know, whatever. But she was able to, you know, because I could barely stand. And with, you know, just the momentum, boom, like, you know, I go down, and when I did, I hit my head on the back of the ground, and I was actually kind of stunned. Like, you were, you know, wrestling around a little bit, we had some fun, but that's to put in the point, you know, I'm still a boxer, I'm still an athlete, so someone smaller than me took me down when they were, you know, obviously in a certain situation, you know, I wasn't.
And it's, I mean, whatever problems they had, the two of them had, too, I do want to add something that, you know, all reports say that he didn't punch her, he didn't backhand her, he pushed her, that's what did the damage. So,
yeah.
I mean, that says a lot for a guy who's, you know, could have done a lot worse.
True.
And even at his worst, it's just pushing the girl to the ground. Not that that's something to cheer about.
When I wrote my article the other day, I was combining the article that I wrote a few years ago. One thing I mentioned in there, and for any of those listening, I ask you to check it out. It's at www.womensfightnews.com/WordPress. Go into the boxing section. I'm sure to find it in there. It's an Arturo Gatti memorial. And one thing I said was, when Gatti lost that fight to Alfonso Gomez, and he announced his retirement, the New Jersey commissioner then was Larry Hazard Jr. This was Gatti's 9th straight fight in Atlantic City. That's where he was fighting. He was getting guaranteed sellouts every time. And it was Larry Hazard Jr. that had stopped that fight. When he was, you know, because he was trying to get up to continue to get to Gomez, and Hazard got in the ring and overruled the referee and said, no, like, stop, it's over. And they interviewed Larry Hazard, and he said, I hope he is sincere about his retirement, but if he is not, I will be hard pressed to give him a license to fight again in the state of New Jersey because I am concerned about his health. If you look at it now, 2 years later, it's like, you don't realize it. Probably would have been safer in the ring.
Ironic.
I mean, just imagine this, Rich. Like, imagine you finally, you know, we would have like the mismatch of the week.
Right.
Imagine every 3 months, say, oh, we got the mismatch of the week coming from Atlantic City. We got Arturo Gatti, who's, you know, 49 or 31 knockouts, and he's fighting, you know, this guy here is 5-24. 10 round fighting, and this guy's been knocked out in the third round of every fight he's been in. And we could laugh about it, and then it would still sell out Atlantic City. And then you've got him knocked guy out, and then he'd say, you know what, I'd like another title shot, or I want to fight some bigger opponents. And you can see the manager in the background just kind of shaking their head like, no, we'll go to Josh Fogan next time. And, he loved the fans, like, you know, he loved, you know, the fans' cars, supporting. They said, back in the day, when he used to do it, like, especially in the question, you could hear some of the tweets where he didn't cut and everything. And he was even waiting to get, you know, stitched up after a fight. They had, like, these little, like, strips on them, like, these little, like, even strips,
right?
And he went right to the closest spot. And he said, you can keep dancing. You blow with the tripping on the dance floor. Yeah, true story. I don't know much about this man about her yet. I know she met her in a strip club in Jersey. She's originally from Brazil. But I remember.
I know strippers carry a lot of drama with them wherever you find them. Wherever
sure,
they go.
So, I mean, that's back in nature. You're not bullshitting them. But I remember a couple years ago when Gotti they get. They were engaged. So, like, then I remember about a year or two after that, they were showing Gotti having a picture because he had his first child, and it was in Ring Magazine, but it wasn't with this girl, Amy, it was with this other girl, and it was a Hispanic girl, because she had real dark hair, and they had a blur together. So I was like, I didn't think that was Amanda Rodriguez. So I was looking up some stuff on the internet last night, and they said, Gotti has two children. The son with Amanda Rodriguez, who was like, what, 10 months old or a year old or something like that, who was with them, and he had a daughter from a previous relationship. So you figure in the last few years, Gotti either had, was either engaged two or three times and married, you know, on a couple occasions. Because you figure, I know he was engaged to this girl, Amy. I don't know what happened there. Then he had the girl that he had the daughter with. And you figure, and he's been married to this, or he's been with this Rodriguez girl since he's 07. That's the fast life right there, and how it can catch you sometimes.
Well, there's that old saying, live fast, die young, and leave it with corpse.
Yeah,
true. Actually, I found a little, couple of online clips of Keith Morrison interviewing a guest in post-retirement, talking about his jewelry line. He started his own jewelry company, he's given out his phone number and everything like that. You barely see him, it was like she did it on the street somewhere outside of the club, it looked like he was already in the day. It was among the guide clips that I found on YouTube. But I was really kind of set back that, you know, especially being a birder and all that, usually the news picks up on that stuff. They follow that stuff anyway. Obviously, it's bad timing with the Michael Jackson thing, and we talked about that to death already, but I mean, it's just kind of a commentary on the news media. You know, obviously, boxing itself as a sport doesn't get as much attention as it used to. They've all did a couple blips here and there about what happened there, but you could do like a whole Nancy Grace show on the legal stuff involved in this, and you know, the different footage that has come back, and the little video that I put on your tribute was from the BBC, and that was the best one I found, so go figure. He's more revered in the news overseas than he is in America.
Right.
What's going on? But, you know, we're trying to keep him alive. We're going to try to at least get Buddy Bird on next week and talk a little bit about him. We're definitely going to get a couple of fighters that are going to be on this KGFX card in Brockton. You can find out more, go to KGFX.com, but check that out. Try to keep the Michael Jackson streak going. Got it. We'll have at least 1 week of full coverage on the website and on the radio show. We'll have 2 weeks of at least some snippets.
I got a couple of nice comments on my new show, my article.
Oh, yeah. Well, part of the reason for that is my Twitter account. The Twitter is working. It's actually coming up in my Google email now. You know, Google Alerts set up for certain things. And every now and then when an article gets pretty popular on the blog, it'll come up with a blog alert. But when things we put out on Twitter that people catch at a certain time, people that read and follow, it comes up as a web alert. So we've got a few of those. One of those was the tribute. I said, if you do, I said, I'll just do the two things.
is a feedback comment on the article page, so other people, you know, can see it and, you know, come on to our book. And then I'll say, and also, share with others. And then I just put a couple of, MySpace and Facebook alerts. So I got you.
Well,
your
word out there. It's been all
used. Yeah, I mean, definitely. More people read
it
than
one
of them. Well, I mean, our show got a lot of people being a
player and a fan, and, you know, I mean, you know, they have the same Bible, and, you know, God bless the soul, and, you know, thanks for the memories.
And, you pretty much put Mickey Ward on the map. Mickey Ward was obviously a great fighter beforehand and afterwards, but as far as the legacy, I don't think anybody is going to hear Mickey Ward and not say Arturo Gatti in the next breath now.
So you're right. Mickey Ward was a guy, you know, tough fighter. Obviously, not him really was, you know, lost a lot of fun, seeing how much ESPN and USA and stuff like that. Obviously, that's all his, you know, he was, Mickey Ward was in the fight this year, 3 straight years. But you're the only four guys, you know, 2 and 3, so, I don't know, what I'll tell you, that Mickey Ward was in the fight this year in 2001 against Manuel Adonis. That was a great fight.
Yeah, I saw that on ESPN Classic one night. It's one of my favorite
fights. Great fight, that's
an awesome fight.
Mickey Ward was not a mainstream guy. I remember, and let me ask you a question, just a part of it in my article. I remember, when, you know, I got my ring night, the Brander guy knocked out Toronto away in like January 2002. It was a defensive issue. Okay, Donnie, fresh off of the present performance, he's trained a bunch of dirt now, and looks for a show of rejuvenating himself. That fight will be in what looks to be a fan-friendly fight against Mickey Ward. That was in the same way. Sailing to shit. Josh Ward, I said, I can't miss this fight. No way, no how, not going to miss it. And it was very key that, I mean, I was a count the days. And I had two congratulations parties that night. And I told each party, I'm like, now I gotta go to the other one. I said, that was wrong. I told my cousin, I'm like, how was your name, man? It's a friend of mine, I gotta go. You know, I told him I'd be there. I told him, how was your name? Now it's my cousin, now you gotta have a party. I'm like, now we're gonna watch this. You know, you stop by your cousin's party. I said, oh, it's dead. I'll get there at like 6:30. I'm taking off by 8:30. So I get home in time. And my cousin was like, hey, I don't know what you're doing on the short time. I'm having a huge online party. A couple of my girls want you to go. Well, I don't know if it's that ugly or whatever. They can go open up some lines. This is Scotty. Come on. And I said, no, I can't. I said, that's good. My I got to make a stop at my friend's party. My client was his party. Jumped in my car, did about 100. On the way home, got home just to use the road as a start. And I mean, right here. For some parts, you have to last live. That was one.
Yeah. All three of them were good fights.
Also, you know what? And hopefully, people get a chance to talk to Mickey Ward sometime. Soon. The one thing, I mean, I wasn't a talent. Each fight, right? And they're actually shown again this weekend. But if you watch, each fight, there is a point in that fight. The first point was the last round when Medical Gotti got that left hook to the body. You know, he got a counter nine. You know, that was stopping. I mean, Gotti made a comeback. Ward made a comeback. And I remember Gotti with the jump to Rose. He was a puzzle on him. And Jim Lampley swung to the left hook to stop the fight. And, Wesley Miller was coming up the steps with the pally. Pot Lynch had been with Gosh for years. Grabbed Ward by his like quarterman's jacket, banged the back stuff, and said, no, let him get to the round as well. He went to the test round, was his decision. In the second fight, Gosh pushed Ward down in the third round. I mean, Ward's out on his feet. He could barely stand. He got some of the shit out of him. That's perfect. Ward's starving him, not even a one. And he ended up with 7 more rounds of the barbecue cover, which gave him a stumble over himself to the party. Then I seen the third fight with Gotti, probably hand him, and McGregor was about to stop him. He told me to stop the fight. Gotti goes, no, I got no more. And I'll never forget, I was, you know, in charge of the third party. And it's coming up to the 10th round. And Michael Buffer goes, ladies and gentlemen, here we are for the 10th. And he says, and that's the bottom. He goes, no, the first shot and final round. And it was just something.
Yeah, and then there's always that story of the two of them ended up in the same hospital room. Nobody takes it personally, but when they get punched by their friend in a fight.
Funny,
people don't understand. They're like, how do you hit your friend? You know? And I'm like, well, it's easy, you know?
The bottom of the third,
yeah.
That's right. I'm sure I've never seen, like, things just turn personal and with me and that, you know? Because, like, one person, you know, and Graham, you're like, you're especially when you're sparring, because, you know, all the fair things are in a fight. But if you're sparring and, you know, I know there's some of the time I went in there, but, you know, how bad you sprained ankle, and my trainer didn't want me going in there sparring, but, you know, don't fight, you just kind of knock out walls, and, I mean, I'm just going to spare up things to let it out, you know, just move around the ring. I'm like, are you sure? You know, I'm trying to, like, you can't put a skip to us, and that's all. I said, that's all. I said, I don't really go for the guys here. You know what, I said, they get to either, and I just don't trust them. Kind of a language barrier, but when his trainer kind of put me in his mind that, no, I really believe in these things, and I was going there to be, you know, doing a game, whatever. And so, you know, because I'm a warrior, I will, you know, I'm ready to fight the warrior, you know, come on, I'm really back. You know, I'm a big brother, and I'm really training, it was my first time back. So a lot of legitimate animosity built out of that. You know, but there was I would be at, so I was training the guy last season and we're getting ready for the regionals. And he was a little bit of a smart mouth and, you know, when he was done on his drugs and, you know, we're in there. And he told us, I was really focusing. And he eventually started talking with a couple chads and kind of, you know, tilted his head here a little bit. And he stopped right in front of me. What's heavy about? And I threw a 1-2, purposely not to hit him, but to like get like right in his face. I said, if you do that at Penn State this Friday, your opponent, who's a friend of mine from Penn State, named Lou Muccio, I said, he will knock your dick so far in the dirt. You're really going to be a DP. He's like, shut the fuck up, man. I said, no. I said, I could have just drilled you right there. And I pulled back. I said, too late, you're going to pull back. And this guy didn't talk to me for a couple days. And then, you know, he's like, you know, man, thanks, you know, I know you're looking out for me. But he got out there and he made pretty much the same mistake because Lou started busting him up a little bit, and he got knocked out, he got his dick knocked in the dirt.
Well, that's what happens when you're
listening to me. Yeah, well, I try to help a lot of guys, you know, but, you know, what can I do? But we're running out of time,
dude. Yeah, we only got like 2 minutes left to shoot the CD, so we're going
to
cut it short.
Yeah, I'm going to do my next shit.
And you know, get the bathroom and then, you know, you're ready to do a few more things. But guys, I mean, thank you all for listening tonight. I mean, it was kind of a tough show for me, you know. I've been a Terry Gotti fan for a lot of years, and it was, you know, nice, you know, just to talk some stories and for you and I to just the bullshit, you know, everything, and, you know, reminisce about some of our favorite memories. And, you know, until next week, and hopefully we can keep the train rolling. The Arturo train, and we'll talk some more next week about it. Till then, this is your boy, the Tornado. I'm signing out, and, you know, peace off to you.